Translation: thereafter, when the Supreme Purusha desired to smell odors, the nostrils and respiration were generated, the nasal instrument and odors came into existence, and the controlling data of air carrying smell also became manifested.
Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshmi Hanuman ji ki, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki.
Purport given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki. The nasal instrument, odor, and the controlling deity, air, smelling, etc., all became manifested simultaneously when the Lord desired to smell. The Vedic mantras confirm this statement in the Upanishad statement that everything is first desired by the Supreme before the subordinate living entity can act upon it. The living entity can see only when the Lord sees. The living entity can smell when the Lord smells, and so on. The idea is that the living entity cannot do anything independently. He can simply think of doing something independently, but he cannot act independently. This independence in thinking is there by the grace of the Lord, but the thinking can be given shape by the grace of the Lord. And therefore the common saying is that man proposes and God disposes. The whole explanation is on the subject of the absolute dependence of the living entities and absolute independence of the Supreme Lord. Less intelligent persons claiming to be on an equal level with God must first prove themselves to be absolute and independent, and then they must substantiate their claim to being one with God.
Om Jnanate Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Bye Bacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnane Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Nasike nirabidhyetam dodhu yatina bhasvati tatra vayur gandavaho ghrano nasi jigrikshataha. Thereafter, when the Supreme Purusha desired to smell odors, the nostrils and respiration were generated, the nasal instrument and odors came into existence, and the controlling deity of air, carrying smell, also became manifested. So, Hare Krishna, everyone. I'd like to obviously seek the blessings, everyone, so I can try and repeat and say some words on this that can help us in our understanding. And, forgive any offences if I say anything out of turn. I'll try not to. A lot of the points that one would have wanted to convey have actually been conveyed over the last few days in the classes that we've had with Navadip Prabhu and Jainitai Prabhu, Kanchanabja Prabhu, and yesterday, of course, Swayam Jyoti Prabhu gave. So I'm just going to try to go on the back of that and see if we can kind of consolidate the understanding that's going on here. So we can see that Sukadeva Goswami is explained to Parikshit Maharaj in these cantos about various things, particularly regarding the universal form and the different energies that are coming from the universal form, and how everything is ultimately contained within Krishna. He is the one. We know that Krishna is Sagun, meaning that all qualities that we are benefiting from in this age, in this world, are coming from him. Although he himself is Nirguna as well, is described in Ishopanishad, that he himself is not affected by the qualities. In the sense that when we imbibe the qualities given to us by Krishna, we can also get impacted by them, influenced by them, affected by them, but Krishna himself doesn't. He's always transcendental to them himself. And so here, in this verse, we're specifically looking at the sense of smell and odors and nostrils. And yeah, such an important sense to have. I mean, you know, if it didn't have the nostrils and the sense of smell, you know, so many wonderful things we can do with that. Smelling flowers, perfumes, scents, food, prasadam. You know, it's incredible the things that we can actually do with the sense of smell. And, and there are actually even so many species out there that have actually got incredible sense of smell, like sharks. You know, they can smell a drop of blood in, like, you know, an ocean of water from like a mile away or something. You know, there's some statistic there, right? Sharks can got such amazing sense of smell. And bears, they say amongst land mammals, bears have got the most strongest sense of smell. It's really incredible. And yet, yeah, what we understand here, that it's all actually coming from Krishna. So amongst these verses, I mean, there's two things that we should actually, imbibe, is that one is that Krishna is himself fully independent, right? As Srila Prabhupada says here, right? Before the subordinate living entity, the independence in thinking is there by the grace of the Lord. Yes, the absolute independence. So I'm just looking at what Prabhupada said. The absolute independence of the Supreme Lord. So in Sanskrit, this means swarat. Krishna is fully swarat. He's fully independent. And he's also known as aptakama. Aptakama meaning that he is fully self-satisfied. He can fully satisfy his own desires fully by himself. He doesn't need anyone else. There are various energies that are coming from Krishna. And, he has his spiritual energy, which is the transcendental energy, known as the Antaranga Shakti. And within this Shakti, there are different divisions, actually, of this Shakti. You've got the Samvit potency, the Sandini potency, the Ladini potency. In fact, I know some of you are new here, but you'll notice on the left-hand side, when you've seen the deities, if you look carefully, next to Krishna, there's Radharani there. So she's the feminine aspect of Krishna, the Shakti, the energy of Krishna. And she's actually the original energy of Krishna. So Krishna has many energies, but the original energy, the Adi Shakti, is Radharani. And she's overseeing the Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini potencies. The Samvit potency is the all-knowing potency, the Chit potency. The Sandini potency is the energy required to maintain all the existences, spiritual, material. You know, you need energy to maintain things, right? So that's also, she's overseeing that. And then she's also overseeing the Ladini potency, which is the pleasure-giving potency. And in fact, Radharani gives special emphasis on this potency, this pleasure-giving. Now, this is very important because, you know, us as human beings, we're also looking for pleasure, right? In this world, everyone's looking for pleasure, not just people on the spiritual path, people on the material path. Everyone is looking for some pleasure, right? Because it's inherent within us, because it's also part of Krishna. So, now here's an interesting thing. In the spiritual realm, it says that all the servants and all the energies of Krishna, they are like first-class servants of Krishna, right? They are all geared towards serving Krishna, and they're serving him perfectly. So a first-class servant is someone that knows the heart, the mind, the desire of the Lord without having to ask the Lord or the Master, right? They just know like that what the Lord is thinking, what he needs, and things like that. And then you've got, and so, you know, example of this is, of course, the spiritual personalities are there with Krishna in the spiritual world, right? And those who also may be in the material world but are fully on a spiritual consciousness. Like, for example, we have Srila Prabhupada, all these great acharyas. They're like first-class servants, because even they're in the material world, because they're completely connected with Krishna, they know how to satisfy Krishna fully, right? Then you've got the second... Okay, that's the spiritual energy, which is the antaranga shakti, the internal energy. Then you've got most of us. So we are the conditioned souls. We are going through this material life, birth after birth, going through, like, you know, reincarnation. We've been here so many lives. We're having to go through all our karmic reactions from last life to this life, and, you know, what knows what kind of karma we've had from previous lives, and then we're going to die, and then we're going to go into another body and get more karma. Constantly just going through the cycle of birth and death in this material world. So actually, we originally are also part of the spiritual superior energy, the antaranga shakti, but we are in a state of forgetfulness. So therefore, we are right now, we are known as the tatastha shakti, which is the marginal. Marginal meaning that we are actually in a forgotten state, right? We are like, we actually should be connected with Krishna. In fact, when one takes to the spiritual path, whether it's Krishna consciousness or such paths, it means that you're actually trying to reinstate yourself in your spiritual position and to actually try to get yourself out of this material domination that we're under. Right? So that's the tatastha shakti. In the tatastha shakti as well, I mean, you know, you have also people are serving Krishna, but you could say in a grudging mood. They're not wanting to necessarily serve Krishna in a loving way, but they're forced to in their own ways. Everyone has to kind of submit to something in this material world. And then you've got the internal energy, you've got the marginal energy, which is most of us are trapped in, and then you've got the material energy, the external energy, which is the bahiranga shakti. So this shakti is the matter, the material realm that we're living in. Like, you know, for those who may have seen this movie back in the day, you know, The Matrix, you know, like it talks about, you know, some of you of a certain age will know about this film anyway, right? The Matrix. We're in the Matrix now. It's the material world. And this material world is actually overseen by Maya Devi, Durga Devi. And, you know, we talked about this in the last few lessons, how she actually is overseeing this energy with her trident and the Trishul. And on the trident, there are three pokes. And there are the Adi Bhautika, Adi Atmika, and Adi Devika miseries. The miseries coming from the body, the miseries coming from the others, other entities, and miseries coming from material nature. So everyone in this world is being affected by these three miseries. No matter who you are, no matter how fortunate or unfortunate you are, how powerful you are or weak you are, everyone has to be affected by these three miseries. Right? So this is the material world that we're in right now. Okay, so this is the situation we're in, and the whole point that we have to understand is that the senses that we've been given, because, you know, in these verses, as has also been mentioned in the last few lessons, that the understanding is that, yes, we're not talking directly about Krishna here, we're not talking about directly Krishna's pastimes and qualities, but the reason we have to understand this is because we have to know what our position is in the material world, right? So it's not that we have to get stuck on these verses, because they can be quite technical, but we have to understand the process, which are processes that we are being subjected to, and then use that as a tool to see how we can then get out of this place and understand that this body is not under our control. Right? And in fact, last few lessons it's been mentioned. In fact, the enjoyer of this body and of the senses is the Lord. He is the Purusha, right? These senses, as is mentioned in these verses, the senses that we have, sight, sound, smell, taste, everything, it's all actually belonging to the Virat Purush, the universal form of the Lord. It belongs to Him, and as it's mentioned here, as Prabhupada said as well, that simultaneously they become manifested as soon as the Lord desires them. So they belong to Him, we are simply being leased these senses. The Lord is leasing these senses to us, bequeathing them to us to use whilst we're in these bodies. Now here's the issue, here's the problem. If we want to get out of this place, we're going to have to use these senses in His service to satisfy Him. The issue is that because we're in this material world, we think we're little Krishnas ourselves. And that's the reason why the living entity came to the material world, because we wanted to enjoy separately from Krishna. We want to be the Swarat. We want it to be the self-satisfied one, the Aptakama, right? But as Prabhupada says here in the last bit, that you must substantiate, they must substantiate their claiming to being one with God. Every single day of our lives, we are getting reminders that we're not God. And the thing is that when we got these senses, because of trying to use them separately from Krishna, then that's actually what creates our karmic bondage that basically keeps us in this world more and more and more. But as soon as we try and do that paradigm shift and use them in Krishna's service, then we'll see there's a whole new change in our lives and elevates our consciousness. Now, we may always ask ourselves that, why do I need to serve Krishna? Why do I need to satisfy His senses? Why not my senses? So, Mahaprabhu says in the Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Atmindriya Pritivancha Tare Bolikam, Krishnandriya Pritiyachya Dhare Premenam, means that desire to satisfy one's own senses is called lust, but the desire to satisfy the senses of Krishna is called love. Right? So, because we have a negative connotation of the word serve and satisfy someone else, because you think of exploitation and you think of like, what's in it for me? What benefit do I get from making Him happy? What about me? But because we're connected with Krishna, what we don't realize is that if we can satisfy Krishna, the level of pleasure and happiness, ananda, bliss that we experience is infinitely more powerful and more beautiful than anything that we can experience in this material world. So much more. And that's why, when this reporter asked Srila Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, Swamiji, back in the day in America, they'd call them Swami, isn't it? Swamiji, why do your followers have to follow all these principles and regulations? Like, where's the enjoyment for them? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, you don't realize. I'm actually showing them what is real enjoyment. Because we're actually selling ourselves short by thinking that we can enjoy these senses. The senses, in fact, the more we try and enjoy the senses, the more it drags us down into the lower situations. For example, we just talked about bears today, and how bears have got great sense of smell. So we can try to hone our sense of smell for our own gratification, but then be careful because you might become a bear in your previous life, in your next life, So we don't want to be that. We may have been bears in previous lives, so now we're humans. So the whole point of a human life is that this is the life where you can break that cycle of birth and death and connect back with Krishna, right? And so therefore, that then once you acknowledge that and accept that, then we have to use the senses to satisfy Krishna in His service. Otherwise, we're going to get constantly poked by the three, spikes of Durga Devi's trident. In fact, there's a nice little pastime analogy, actually, that is mentioned. I believe it was Vidura mentioned this to Dhritarashtra in the Mahabharata. For those of you who know about the Mahabharata, it's a great historical epic. And Dhritarashtra was not coming out of the... He was getting old, and Vidura was a great friend of his, actually his brother, half-brother, and was telling him that, look, you need to come out of this place because you've been here for so many years, you've seen so much, now you need to focus on the twilight stage of your life on self-realization. And then he gave an analogy. It's not in the Bhagavatam, but I'm sure it's actually in the Mahabharata itself. He says that there was once a prince, and the prince is riding on a horse, riding high and mighty and proud on his white horse, galloping away. And as he was galloping, then there was a tiger that started chasing him from behind. So then he started to giddy up the horse even faster, right? And then as the horse was going, Then the horse buckled and the prince went flying and then he fell into a well. But just before he was about to fall right into the bottom of the well, he grabbed onto the edge of the well and like was hanging on for dear life. No, he managed to actually grab onto a branch before he fell fully into the well. And then as you can see, the tiger's coming running and the tiger starts to like, you know, lean over the edge of the well, trying to like, you know, reach at him and grab him and, you know. And at the same time, so he's hanging there off a branch. He's got a tiger chasing after him. This is a very dangerous position to be in, right? At the same time, he starts hearing hissing from underneath, from the well. And he can see these pythons coming up, trying to like get at him from the well. So he's hanging midair like this. As that's going on, then he could hear this kind of like crunching sound. And he can see that there's a black rat and a white rat at the branch, at the base of the branch, nibbling away at the branch. So this is very bad, because, you know, if they nibble away, that's it. He's gone, you know, he's hanging like this branch. Terrible situation to be in. And then, on top of that, the branch is connected to the tree and it's shaking because he's hanging off it. And there's a beehive there. So the beehive is, you know, is getting disturbed. So all the bees are coming out and they, you know, they're quite angry. You know, and this is not very good at all. And so the bees start circling around him and they start to sting him. So this is really, really bad. So just to let you know, the prince hanging off a branch, black rat, white rat, nibbling at the branch, snakes coming from underneath, and a tiger looming at the edge. And then on top of that, he's got getting bee stings. And in the middle of it all, there's like a drop of honey that's coming from the beehive. And in the middle of it all, like, you know, he's very bad, in very bad situation. And he's trying to stick his tongue out to see if he can taste some of that honey that's coming from the hive, right? So, okay, so this is what you call an allegory, right? An allegorical tale. So, first thing first is, who does the prince represent? Us, that's right, yes, us. We, the jivas, the living entities. That horse, what did the horse represent? No, not quite body. No, so the horse represents our pride, our ego, you know, like our sense of like, you know, because he's riding high and mighty. And you know, they say pride comes before a fall. So the horse was about to fall, you know. So like that, we also go through life acting very proud. We think we're the controller. Well, you know, especially when our senses are strong. When I say senses, not just our physical senses, our subtle senses, when the mind and intelligence is like functioning so fully, we literally think we're God, isn't it? And so many people are trying to be gods, right? So, but then what happens is the more proud you become, the more then what will happen? The fall will come, right? Okay, so then you got the tiger. What does the tiger represent? So the tiger represents... I always get this mixed up, actually. But, okay, no, this is okay, we can work with it. The tiger represents all devouring existence, right? All devouring existence. Existence finishes everything on the material plane, right? Then you've got the snakes from underneath. What do they represent? Death. So that's an impending death coming up. Right, what does the branch represent? The branch represents the hanging on for dear life, that everyone is desperate to clinging on to this life that we've got. Like, we know that we're going to die in this world, in the material world, but no one actually wants to die. They're trying to, like, stave off death as much as possible. Even, like, oh, when people get old, they still want to kind of, like, you know, like, stave off death as long as possible. Then you've got the black rat and the white rat. Yes. Yes, day and night. Day and night. You know, the black and the white, day and night. That is basically representing them. Each day and night, our lives are getting shorter and shorter, getting chipped away. Chipped away. That branch of our life is going to finish soon. Right, and then you've got the bees coming from the hive. What do they represent? Yeah, it could be. You could say that. Okay, I mean, specifically, they represent the threefold miseries that we mentioned that we're all subjected to in this material world. Adi Atmika, miseries from our body, adibhautika, misery from other entities. So misery from one's body means it could be mental illness, physical illness, all these kind of things. Misery, adibhautika, means misery from other entities. It could be like other creatures, it could be other people, it could be on a very like low level, like, you know, some person who's bugging you at work. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sidharam Lakshmi Hanuman Shri Shri Gornitai ki. It could also mean miseries from other people who have offended you or harmed you. It could even be like, you know, when one country invades another country. That goes on a lot, as we see throughout the news all the time, right? That's also a form of adibhautika. And adidevika is miseries from the material nature, right? So it could be bad weather, this and that, all the rest of it. So those bees are representing the stings of the material life they're all subject to. So this is our situation in the material world. We are that prince hanging on for life, impending death. Our existence is going, you know, getting shortened day by day, and we're still hanging on, and we're going, at the same time getting affected by the miseries. This is not the natural condition for the soul. The soul is meant to be Satchitananda, full of eternity, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. And this is the problem, that in the middle of it all, we're still trying to stick our tongue out and taste a drop of honey, which is us trying to enjoy our senses. Right? So the whole point is that, and the thing is, we can't even enjoy the senses properly, because remember, the senses don't belong to us, they belong to the Virat Purush, the universal form of the Lord. So us trying to enjoy them is like, you know, vicariously trying to enjoy them. Vicariously meaning that, you know, when you're trying to enjoy something through someone else, like, you know, like a parent who like is forcing their kid to like go into a certain career because they wanted to actually do it themselves, but they didn't or couldn't, and so they're trying to live through their kids or something. That's like vicariously living, you know, trying to enjoy through someone else, right? So yeah, like this is the situation that we're in, you know. So but the Lord, he's different. He's completely self-satisfied. Senses belong to him. So if we can try and just utilize our senses in his service, then we'll see that the whole thing changes. Perfect example of this is Srila Prabhupada, you know. His whole life, he pretty much used all his intelligence, his senses, everything in Krishna's service. In fact, it's interesting, you know, Srila Prabhupada, when he was 5 years old, he actually, everyone here heard of Rath Yatra, especially the new people. It's one of our biggest festivals. In fact, for those of you who can make it, 30th of July, we're having London Rath Yatra. It's amazing. You know, with the chariot that goes down, it's going to be in Trafalgar Square and things like that. Anyway, so Prabhupada did his first Rath Yatra at 5 years old, right, in Kolkata. And then later on, 1971, he then performed the big first Rath Yatra to be conducted outside of India, which was in San Francisco. And he actually told one of his disciples, I believe it was Hridayananda Maharaj, that, you know, what I'm doing now, this is in 1971, you know, when he's now in America, he's fully establishing the movement, developing the temples, the books, everything. And he actually said that, what I'm doing now, I've always been doing. And then he recalled how 1971 Rath Yatra, that, you know what, I've been doing this all the time. I've been doing this since I was a kid. So, you know, for him, like, all his senses were fully engaged in Krishna's service. So for us, same thing. We should try to engage our senses fully in Krishna's service. And then we can then also attain that freedom from the material suffering, from the material energy. In fact, again, just coming back to Srila Prabhupada again, I believe it was 1921, Srila Prabhupada met his spiritual master. So you know Prabhupada is there on the left. Next to him, that's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj. He met him. And at that time, Prabhupada was a young student in Calcutta then, in Scottish Church's College. And you know this was the independence movement going on. You know the British independent, the Indian independence and British rule. The British Empire was like, you know, the thing at the time. And he was what you call a Gandhian. He was following the Gandhi philosophy. So everyone's heard of Mahatma Gandhi, right? You know, independence movement. And so when he met Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj at a program, he actually said to him that, you know, because Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is a sage, Krishna conscious acharya. So he's talking about, no, the need of the day is to become Krishna conscious. That is what is most important in society right now. And Srila Prabhupada is saying, like, we're in the middle of a colonial subjugation. We're under the control of the British Empire. I think it's more important for us to break free from British rule. You know, I think that's more of important now. We can look at spirituality later, but isn't that more important? And then Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj then also then relayed a pastime. And he said, this is a pastime from the Mahabharat. Again, another pastime. This is where Yudhishthir, he's in the forest and he's talking to a buck. A baka is a being, like a crane. In the form of a crane, it's actually a celestial being called Yamaraj, disguised as a crane, right? And they're having these question-answer sessions. And then, then the crane asks Yudhishthir, what's the news? What's the news? And so then Yudhishthir Maharaj said, what news? It's all the same. It's all the same. We are all here in the frying pan of Maya, right? And we're getting roasted in the frying pan of Maya. And then sometimes we might get fried on one side, and then we get tossed and then get fried on the other side. And like this, our material life goes on. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj turns to Srila Prabhupada and says that, what is better if a person is getting fried in the frying pan of Maya? That is it better to then maybe take him and then flip him over like a pancake, so then he gets fried on the other side? Or is it better to go in there and take him out of the pan? And then Srila Prabhupada said, take him out of the pan. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said, this is the difference between material independence and spiritual independence. Materially, you can try and adjust your situations this way, that way. You're going to get fried. Like, let's take India, for example. India got free in 1947. It doesn't mean that India's problems have gone. India's probably got a lot of problems. Right? I'm sure those from India can testify. Right? As is every other country in the world. Britain, Britain was ruling. Britain has also got a lot of problems now. We're getting fried. No matter what, how much you try and adjust your situation in the material world, you're going to get fried. So the main thing is, get out of this place. Get out of this place. Use the body, the remaining years you've got, to try and focus on connecting with Krishna. Use that as a foundation, and then experience real happiness afterwards. Okay. So, and therefore, we have a choice that we can make in our lives of what we do and how we're going to live our lives. Otherwise, we're going to suffer the reactions of our karma again and again and again. Okay, I'm going to pause here. Is there any questions or comments or anything? Rajabhumi Mataji.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
No, you can use it. We can hear you. Yeah.
I was just thinking about how do we use our senses in the Lord's service. There's a beautiful pastime in Bhagavatam about Ambarish Maharaj. Maybe you can relate a little bit to for the new people to understand how we can use all our senses in the Lord's service.
Okay, I can't speak too much detail because I don't remember the details of Ambarish Maharaj, how he specifically used his senses. But, yeah, so the good thing is this, though, that the Krishna conscious philosophy lays out very nicely how we can utilize senses. Because we're talking about, okay, senses belong to Krishna. They belong to the universal form. So therefore, we're kind of like borrowing them. But therefore, we need to use them in his service if we want to make them the best of it. Use them as tools to get out of this material world. So it starts from very kind of like, you know, sort of simple level. Like, you know, just simple things like, you know, using our visual senses to like look at Krishna, smell, taste Krishna prasanna. That's why, you know, we offer the food to Krishna first before we're tasting it. So we're making sure that we're not taking anything that is just materially contaminated. But it then goes further and further. You can then also start utilizing your talents, your qualities, your nature in Krishna service. You know, anasaktasya visayan yatarha mupayunjata nirbanda Krishna sambande yukta vairagya muchyate, that, you know, whatever possessions you have, you can dovetail them in using it for Krishna's service. Whether you have land, labor, capital, manpower, brain power, everything can be used. And even if you have desires, they can also be used. Like, let's say, for example, you know, you want to be you want to gain some recognition as a person who's going to make it in the world as an entertainer. Use it in Krishna's service. Or you want to be a great singer. Again, you can use it in Krishna's service. What will happen is, as you use it in Krishna's service, let's be honest, in the initial stages, it's going to be like you're using it for Krishna, but you're also getting some buzz out of it yourself. It's known as Sakam Karma Yoga. In other words, that you're, you know, let's say you have a need to rule. You need to have a need to manage stuff, because that's something within you. You can use it to manage a project for Krishna, right? Or you have a need, you have a desire to make lots of money. Use that as a way to make money for Krishna. But there is a buzz that you're getting from it yourself. But what happens, as you do it more for Krishna, you will also start to get purified of that personal buzz. And eventually you'll come to a stage where nishkam, where there's no desire for yourself. You're doing it fully for Krishna. So it's a gradual process. So whilst we're saying here that, yeah, you should use your services, your senses in Krishna's service, it doesn't mean that we go cold turkey overnight from where we're at that moment, right? Because that will take time. So therefore, even Prabhupada himself, he gave a very gradual process that, okay, step one, just start the chanting. Step two, start reading the book. Step three, start offering this. Then start reading the book, start associating with devotees. So then through that, then gradually, then eventually as the years progress, everything will be utilized in Krishna's service. Some people can do it overnight, of course, but yeah. And then you'll come to a stage where it said, Anya bhilashita sunyam jnana karma dinavritam anukulyena krishna nusilanam bhaktiruttama. I think that's the verse, yeah. Where basically you actually end up using your fruitive results, your jnana, your knowledge, everything, to serve Krishna when he wants it, how he wants it, in the way he wants it. Right now, it's going to be a bit of a trade-off where we're serving Krishna, but in the way we want to serve Krishna and how we want to do it. But as we do, as we keep with the process, we'll come to a stage where we're going to serve Krishna how he wants it. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah, Prajna Prabhu?
Tad Karusha Madhaparnam. It says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever difficulties you go through, do that, and whatever charity you give, do that as an offering to me. So basically he's saying, give me everything, but as an act of worship. In other words, you're washing up your house, your children, they're Krishna's. You look after them for Krishna. You know, the house is your... Krishna's given you. It's his house. And we see everything in that way as not belonging to ourselves, but we do whatever we do. Even we clear up our washing up. And instead of leaving it messy, like a thing, but no, we must do whatever we do in a nice way that is make Krishna happy. Okay. So that's
all. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. David?
Thank you, Prabhu. My question is that if someone was to take the Krishna consciousness and they don't have a thriving community of devotees around them, can someone anywhere take the Krishna consciousness and stay strong in Krishna consciousness if they're far away from a temple and so on like that?
Yeah, okay. So, that's a very interesting question. Again, this is really good because we can use our senses in Krishna's service, and also the extensions of the senses. So technology is an extension of us using our senses. So we can use technology in a good way or a bad way. Bad way is where you get sucked more into like the mature world and get like drowning in like Instagram and TikTok and Facebook or whatever, you know. Or you can use it in a good way. So nowadays, we're very fortunate that we have online facilities. We can have online discussion groups and study groups where we can keep constant association. In fact, right now, we have Sangha groups from the Manor with members that are all over the country, you know, that, you know, and they're meeting weekly to discuss Krishna conscious things, to get that regular nourishment. Obviously, you know, we have the books. We have the morning classes, which is being broadcast everywhere around the world. So I think in this day and age, there are ways in which we can, you know, utilize association of people, even if we don't have the luxury of seeing them face to face all the time, you know. And also, it should be an impetus for us to also like develop more centers around the country, so that we can actually also have face to face. Because I do understand that face to face, I would say, is definitely better than just online association. But at least if you are living in the stick somewhere, you can still avail of online association. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes. Andrew Prabhu. Oh, okay, but say, oh, no, okay.
So you mentioned several times that just get out of this place, get out. And I used to think, before meditation, I used to think, okay, this place, sometimes it's not so nice. You could just really want to get out of it, you know, just leave any moment. If I get if the opportunity was presented. But now, is it when you say leaving, you mean not taking birth again? Or is that what you mean, liberation, so you don't come back? You're free from material existence? Because I'm thinking, well, okay, I could remain where I am and be in the right consciousness and be fully enlightened and then experience whatever one you experience without going anywhere. You know, and that's also perfection. Meaning you can stay in the material world and you can take, well, I think you have special souls who do come back to deliver us. But generally speaking, if I'm situated in this material miserable place, in the right consciousness, then I don't need to get out. So when you say get out, what do you mean?
Yeah, get out. We're talking here not just on a physical sense. Physical is there, but get out meaning that get out of the material consciousness. So one can be fully enlightened and liberated whilst being in the mature body. So example again, we have these great personalities who are in a mature body, but their consciousness was fully connected with Krishna. Like Prabhupada would say, you know, he was in the middle of Bowery, you know, a famous quote, he says, I'm in Vrindavan, I'm always in Vrindavan, right? So he's always in Vrindavan consciousness wherever he is. So there's that aspect. So if you get to that stage where you're constantly in like a state of immersed in Krishna consciousness wherever you are, that means you're not affected by the mature world anymore. So you are liberated in that sense. But also means that, yeah, when you die, you're not coming back here. Not at least in a conditioned way, as a, you know, like going through birth and death, birth and death. Now, obviously, when you go back to the spiritual world, if Krishna wants to then use you for a mission to come down here, as in, you know, Nitya Siddha, like, you know, Krishna will have special beings that he sends down here for a mission to bring back people, like Prabhupada came from the spiritual. Prabhupada, I think, even said that actually Jesus Christ also came from the spiritual world. He was not a conditioned soul like us going through the ringer, you know, that birth and death, birth and death. So like that, if Krishna wants to do that, that's fine, because, you know, you're coming on a mission, and then once the mission's done, that's it, you're back with him again. Whereas the difference with us, though, is that we are not on a mission here. We are just trapped here, life after life. So we need to get out of the trap first. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. And now we can engage our sense of taste to partake of prasadam. Hare Krishna.